coming to you live from my apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast, and now here's the guy who, hey, I just found a huge clam. Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Rob Has a Podcast. I am Rob Cesternino, and welcome back, everybody. Very excited to talk about another great episode of Survivor Philippines here, episode number 9. Artist becomes the latest survivor after Mike Scoopin does a little flip action, ends up going against the Tandang Alliance. And who knows where we go from here? But what I do know is we've got a great show for you guys today. We're going to talk with Marty Piombo from Survivor Nicaragua. He is a rap favorite. We've gotten a lot of requests for Marty and happy to bring him back. So we will talk with Marty about everything that's going on during this season. If you missed it this week, boy, this has been a pretty huge week this past week for Rob Has a Podcast. We had a little interview with the one and only host of Survivor, Jeff Probst, earlier in the week. So that was pretty great. We had a really fun interview last night on Survivor Know-It-Alls with Stephen Fishback, and we broke everything down with the whiteboard. And then even this morning, I spoke with Artis, and boy, did he have a lot to say. And that was a lot of fun as well. And now we're going to speak with Marty. Really great week for Rob Has a Podcast. Thanks to everybody who voted on the podcast awards these last 2 weeks. Thank you guys very much for bearing with us and all of those messages. Really, really appreciate it. And thanks so much for all the support. And now it's out of our hands. We'll find out in January if I am indeed going to shave my head at the hands of Dan Gieseling, and whether my marriage can survive this, whether Nicole is going to divorce me. The drama is off the charts here for the podcast award. So that's going to be in January at a New Media Expo, which is going to be the first week in January in Vegas. Also this week in Survivor news, the Survivor Hall of Fame is now inducting a new class of 2012. If you want to help Gordon Holmes out, the curator of the Hall of Fame, and cast your ballots for the Survivor Hall of Fame, you can do so by tweeting at Survivor Hall for the Survivor Hall of Fame. Got the word this week from CBS. So we were on the fence, is this week going to be a recap coming up on Wednesday night? Usually, the last couple of years, the Survivor, either on Thanksgiving when it used to be on Thursday or the one before that, is the recap. I have gotten word officially, no recap. New episode of Survivor this upcoming Wednesday. So that means, now I got to get with Stephen Fishback and find out, are we doing Survivor Know-It-Alls? This I will let you know on Twitter if you follow me at Rob Cesternino. I have already been told exit interviews are going to be moved to Monday of the following week. So whoever gets kicked off Survivor this upcoming Wednesday night, we will talk to them on the following Monday. And we hope everybody has a good Thanksgiving. And I will do a podcast. I will be recapping the episode. What is going to happen is, I don't know if I'm going to do it actually on Thanksgiving. I may end up recording the podcast on Friday, which happens to be Black Friday, and that is a great time to go out and get your shopping done. And who wants to go out and go to the mall and all of these things when you could stay home, listen to podcasts on your couch or wherever you want to be, do whatever you want to do, and get all of the great deals that other people are literally trampling over each other for on the Amazon.com. And you can always support Rob Has a Podcast if you are a listener within the United States by going to robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, and it's very much appreciated. Thank you guys very much who have been shopping this month with it. I know you guys have a lot of choices for wherever you want to go and do your business or your holiday shopping, but by making that decision to go to robhasawebsite.com, not only are you saving money and getting the best deals on Amazon, you're also supporting this very podcast. And in return, I am filling your iPods and iPhones up with junk. That is the promise that I make to you. And it's not a promise like one of these four-finger handshakes.
All right, everybody. It is my pleasure to welcome back to the podcast a man who's one of my favorite people to talk Survivor strategy with, and somebody we haven't had on since all the way back in Survivor Redemption Island from Survivor Nicaragua, the one and only Marty Piombo.
How are you doing, Rob?
Doing great, Marty. How are you doing?
Great. Totally psyched to be on your show as usual, and got great stuff to talk about.
Yeah, it's been a great season and a lot of fun stuff to talk about, and I'm not even sure where to pick it up. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you've been thinking about this season as a whole the last couple of weeks?
Oh, there's so much, but I think where I would start is, listen, as a fan of the show first and then as a contestant and now a fan again, you got to love this game, but you always wonder, you know, what would it be like to play again? And as you see some of these returning players being reintroduced in some of these seasons, you got to really wonder sometimes, like, holy cow, you know, would I want to be one of three returning players? And my instinct would be no way. I mean, I could see going back for an All-Stars. I could see going back for at least one where it's half and half returning versus new players. And my first instinct was, man, these guys are not going to last at all. It's just, you know, I think the typical instinct for someone that's in the game for the first time is, you know, it's my show. It's my time in the sun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what are these returning players doing here? So I find that to be really intriguing, and the way that we've now got two guys, Scoop and Penner, post-merge and three people on the jury is just has made it absolutely awesome.
Well, the interesting thing about you and the game that you played and this season in particular is almost like when you were a first-time player, you guys had Jimmy Johnson on your try, and then, you know, similar to Jeff Kent, who's a former athlete, but it was almost like Jimmy Johnson in some ways was a returning player the way that you guys treated him. And you were ironically like Jeff Kent, who was the same way this season, even though he was the athlete in this scenario, but he didn't want anything to do with the returning player in that scenario. And a lot of the commenters touched on this. So let's talk about this a little bit. Like, what is your philosophy? Why do you feel the way you feel about returning players / NFL coaches on Survivor?
So great question, and actually something that I've thought about, especially since, and I don't know if you, but I'm sure others out there have seen, the NFL put out a show recently, and it's just all on Jimmy Johnson. It's basically Jimmy Johnson's life in football. And it's very interesting because the whole beginning of the show, actually, they take up at least 10 minutes, is all about Survivor. And there's a bunch of pictures of me and Jill and our tribe and Jimmy's audition tape. and it was really interesting because it says a lot about him. And I thought it was an excellent segue. And at the very end, he's giving a huge Jimmy Johnson speech to, I'm sure, folks that have paid to listen to him, talk about football coaching and philosophy. And he, again, talks about Survivor. And I thought about it, and to be totally honest, as I'm sure you've done as well, is, you know, if you've played the game, like, what would I do different? And I thought, boy, it could have been very, very interesting if instead of, moving to get Jimmy off, which at the time, and I'm sure you've heard me say this before, it was a unanimous vote by my tribe, and I didn't have control of everybody on the tribe, so it wasn't just Marty gunning for Jimmy. But what if I had turned that whole situation around and as Jimmy was really wearing down, pulled Jimmy aside and actually gave Jimmy Johnson, you know, a pep talk and see if we could have encouraged him to really hang in there and go farther and deeper in the game? And could I have been able to have gotten him to work more with my alliance as opposed to the people that he was getting close to, which was not my group? And would he have been a threat later when we merged with the young people, which I thought he would be? And I really think that, boy, that could have been a great story for me. It could have been a great story for our season. And it's just, you know, when you're in the thick of it, you're thinking sometimes very linearly. And I chose to go in a different direction.
Marty, it sounds like you're thinking like a storyteller. and you're thinking, what's the story that I want to tell here? Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Thinking a lot like Jonathan Penner, it sounds like.
God, so much so. I mean, last night, I mean, I don't even know where to start. I mean, we've had a couple of episodes so far this season that have honestly been just fantastic. I mean, everything that you would want and hope for in a season of Survivor, where otherwise, as many seasons have just played out this way, have been very predictable and very strong alliances from the beginning. And if you looked at, you know, Boston Rob's last run at it, and even coaches,
yeah,
you know, great strategy, lock down people, but it makes for a very predictable season, assuming that there's not a lot of people defecting or doing any crazy moves, which, you know, I'd say casting has done an incredible job these last few seasons. I mean, it's really been amazing that this show just keeps on going as strong as it has. But that's what's made this season unbelievable to me, which is, and I think that you would agree, is that you want things to be unpredictable. You want excitement. You want twists and turns that you could not have predicted. You want to see drama, and you want to see shifts in the game that really test the players and how they manage the dynamics of an ever-shifting game. I mean, I think I would have freaked out if I had been at the last two tribals where people are madly shifting alliances and votes, you know, with like 4 minutes to walk towards tribal. That's just crazy.
Yeah, I think you touch on the key thing is unpredictability. And maybe we should blame Boston Rob, because he kind of brought this back, this pagonging back to Survivor. Because say what you want about Survivor Nicaragua, it's not everybody's favorite, but it was unpredictable. And there were a lot of twists and turns in the game, especially after the merge. But then Boston Rob comes back and he brings his alliance and totally wipes out the other team. Then Coach does the same, takes the same blueprint into the next season. And then Kim Spradlin ends up, you know, running the same playbook the season after that. And this is like the first season since Nicaragua that we have some real big shakeups after the merge.
Yeah, it's I absolutely love it. Plus, you know, there's been a lot of underdogs, and the underdogs, thankfully, I mean, you know, things shift, as you know, on a dime. And, you know, one immunity challenge, one hidden immunity idol here or there can change the entire complexity of how the season unfolds. And, you know, Penner could not have had it better, and yet he's been fighting for his life from the beginning, which is incredible, and Scoopin winning immunity. I mean, it's all contributed to just some fantastic twists and turns. It's been great. And Penner has just been one of my absolute favorites this season. I mean, you can't help but root for a returning player. And I've got some other favorites in there too. So, but just loving Penner.
Okay, well, let's get into it. I want to know first, who do you see more of yourself in? Are you more of a Scoopin', or are you more of a Penner?
You know, it's funny, after my season, I had a lot of fans that reached out and drew some analogies between me and Penner. And I don't know if it's more just sort of just age and, you know, just our demographics in terms of, you know, college, work, I don't know. So I guess I identify more with Penner, and I think we've seen more of Penner this season as opposed to Scoopin', to be perfectly honest, unless you're talking about just Scoopin' getting banged up every other episode. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, I see a little bit of Penner in you, but I feel like you're a little, I mean this as a compliment, I feel like you're a little more cutthroat strategically than Penner is. Like, I feel like you're cut from the same cloth, but I think he's a little more emotional about the game, and I feel like you're more analytical about the game.
And I looked at him, you know, especially these past few episodes, and Prope said this about me at the beginning of the season, was, you know, I think Marty can go far. I think he's a real player, et cetera. But he said, I think that Marty thinks he's more likable than he actually is, and that a lot of people will not like him. And I look at Penner, and I think, especially his past few episodes, he's absolutely very likable. I mean, he's just been weaving such an incredible story. And at the same time, he hasn't been a pushover either. I mean, I had to rewind literally three times the opening scene when they come back from tribal. And then at the end of the episode, I had to go back to it again because I was laughing so hard when Abby asks him, if he actually voted for her, as if she was surprised.
Yeah.
His answer was just so great. It was, I was PO'd. Yeah. Absolutely. It was just great.
Yeah, of course I voted for you. I was PO'd. He was upset.
It was so great. Yeah. It was absolutely awesome.
Yeah. So Penner is great. He's a lot of fun to watch. And he is being likable this season. I think this has been the most likable that he has been through three seasons, because in the first season he was on, back in the Cook Islands, he got on everybody's nerves and they couldn't stand him. Then the second season, he wasn't there that long. But now he's, you know, even the people that are coming out of the game are saying that they like him. Even Abby Maria said, she doesn't have a nice thing to say about anybody. She said that he's likable.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I met her this weekend. She was actually up here in the Bay Area. Her family lives half an hour or so away from here. So we had like a little mini reunion of Bay Area alums. There was Yao Man and Sonia and Mary Montaigne and Sylvia Kwan. And it was like five or six of us. And it was hysterical meeting Abby, you know, because clearly if there's anybody that you can easily dislike, at least the way she's been edited, it's been Abby. So it was pretty funny. I almost felt like she was making her rounds to say, see, I am nice. I really am nice.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good to know. She has been getting a tough edit so far and really been playing up that she is not that likable of a person. But she does look so angry at these tribal councils. Jeff even said, it looks, Abby Maria, it looks like you're going to spit venom. And she said, no, I'm just listening to what she's saying.
She did. She last night at that tribal, I mean, literally, yeah, it was like she was almost shaking with anger. But boy, she did a pretty good job of containing it and managing whatever anger or whatever was going on. I think she did a pretty good job of that.
So let's talk about this vote last night. So we are at the final nine, and it's always the odd numbers after the merge where we have to really pay attention to, because this is where the big swings could come. So there's nine people left. There's basically four people who are sort of in this new Calabaugh alliance. They've pulled over Malcolm and Denise with Carter and Penner. Then there's three people who are the three people, I've been calling them the Axis of Evil, the three people that nobody liked, at least as what they've been showing us on the show. And then you had Scoopin and Lisa, who were with them up to this point. Now, Scoopin ends up changing his vote. Instead of voting for Tandang, he ends up voting with Calabaugh. Marty, do you like this move for Mike Scoopin?
You know, it's always hard to tell, right? And this is like, you can go back and review Cochran's move and say the same mm-hmm. thing. And I tend to prefer, and so first there's emotional stuff, and then there's just strategy and what's best for you. And I would say, you know, his tribe was treating him like crap. And he had been on the chopping block before. So it would serve their purposes if he stuck around and was with them. But it's also, it was very clear that he was not sort of in that final three. So I tend to respect players that may end up sticking around a bit longer if they just stay true. But the ones that end up controlling their own destiny and taking a chance and throwing caution to the wind and taking a risk are the ones that I find more exciting. And I think it makes the game far more interesting. And in this season, we've seen that happen two, if not three times. And it's amazing. And it changes the complexity of the game. And now you have Scoopin and you have Penner. And it just could be very interesting how the dynamics you know, reorganize themselves over there. And it all depends on what also might happen with little Lisa.
Now, I'm all for taking risks in the game. I don't think you can win the game unless you do take some risks here and there. But was this the right risk? Because the question I want to know is Mike Scoopin better off if him and Lisa are 4-5 with Tandang? Basically now, aren't they 5-6 with this other alliance here? And I know Lisa kept her vote with Tandang, and it's a little muddy as to whether she knew Mike was going to vote the other way, and she said, hey, I got to stay loyal for the eyes of the jury or for Tandang or for whatever. But haven't they kind of gone to a worse position?
Well, have they gone? You mean by virtue of losing Scoopin', you mean?
No, I'm saying that Mike Scoopin' and Lisa, if they're a pair, as they've been edited to be, now aren't they, instead of being 4 and 5 with artists Abby Maria and Pete, aren't they now 5 and 6 behind Penner, Carter, Malcolm, and Denise?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's where we don't know what's going to happen. And again, of course, winning immunities and the rest of it is going to come into play and be very critical. But I've yet to really understand or look at, you know, how are the dynamics of that going to play out on the other side? And what are Penner and Scoopin' going to try to craft? And how is that going to work out with the other tribe? I'm not entirely clear. And Penner could be in just as much trouble, right? I mean, I think, you know, Denise and the rest of those guys, it's not clear to me at all that Penner's necessarily in the inner circle either. Mm-hmm. So there could be some interesting dynamics if you suddenly think of Lisa being kind of muddy, Scoopin', Penner. You know, I'm not sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's unclear to me. I think, you know, next episode, I think, is going to be very definitive on that.
It's not clear. And it really is funny to see these returning players back this season because, you know, the times that we've brought back these two guys to come in back and be the returning players, you had Boston Rob, who was far and away the de facto leader of his tribe. Then you had Coach come back, even Ozzy to a lesser degree, and they were, no question about it, the leaders of their tribe. Now you have Penner and Scoopin', and they're both, neither of them are in any leadership role whatsoever. They're both sort of like in bad positions in the game where new players are in much more leadership roles than they are. And they're just sort of like, you know, floating along here, both of these guys.
Well, I think that's a lot of the dynamics of coming back as a returning player, right? I mean, you can't always be in a leader position, and you know as well as I do that many times that backfires and you can be Jeff Kent and think you're a leader one day and the next thing you know, your torch is being snuffed. You can be Peter and think that you're completely and utterly in control of the game and suddenly turn around and you're now, you know, facing, you know, execution maybe even at the next episode. So things can change quickly. And I think that Boston Rob was an anomaly in terms of the type of utter and complete control that he did. And when you look at Coach, even though he was leading, you know, like in my season, I let Tyrone think that he was leading and it was actually a lot better for me. And it took a lot of heat off me, made him believe that he was utterly in control when he really wasn't in control of anything. And, you know, played itself out really well. So leading doesn't always mean you're going to be in the final three or that you will win.
Now, I was hard on Mike's move last night with Stephen Fishback. We do a live show right after Survivor, and we break it down. I said I didn't like the move. I still don't love the move. But let me speak up for Mike Scoopin' here, why I am less hard on the move today than I was yesterday. Because this morning, I talked to artists, and boy, this guy hates Mike Scoopin's guts. So... So for Mike Scoopin', this, anytime you can get a player out of the game that hates your guts, then that is a good move. So even though I didn't like the from a numbers perspective, boy, this artist hates Mike Scoopin'.
Yeah, so what does that tell you, right? Because I think that it's kind of odd that in the very beginning they showed us a very strong artist and very outspoken, almost dangerously so. And then he went under the radar for quite a while, and we never saw the dynamic of how much, or maybe in the very beginning, of how much disdain he may have had for Scoopin'. So, you know, if Scoopin's highly aware of that or acutely aware of that, he's, you know, it's going to play into his decision-making.
He said to me this morning, he said, the game reveals what kind of person you are. And he said he did not like what he saw in Mike Scoopin'. And God knows what exactly transpired between those two. But there was no love lost between Mike Scoopin' and Artis. And it's a big mystery, I think. What exactly is the beef between them? Was it Sandwichgate? And what was it that Mike Scoopin drew on his parchment? He drew like three burning logs on his card. Did you see this? Did you see this, Mark?
I couldn't see what it really was. You obviously looked at it in more detail. I saw that he had scribbled something on there, but I didn't see exactly what
it's
it
like
was.
Like the Zapruder film, trying to figure out what is really going on here between Scoopin and artists. So in that sense, yes, anytime you can get rid of a guy who just really hates your guts. I mean, and you had something like this in your season with Jane. Was this during the game where you and Jane really went at it?
Yeah, during the game, we definitely went at it. And for me, in part, it was, she hated me, actually, from the very beginning, and I had no hostility towards mm-hmm. her. But I think anytime you create a strong alliance and you leave somebody outside of the alliance, especially somebody like Jane, it can be taken very, very personally by that individual, and they turn it into real rancor and hatred. And I think that's kind of what happened with her, that she felt she was left on the outside and took it deeply, deeply personal. I only really had increased disdain for during the game. I was trying to shift focus and concentration on her and off my back. That was just purely strategic. But after the game, the only thing she's the only person that I don't talk to and I can't stand for my season, but it was just a thing where she talked about my kids.
Got it. She disliked you during the game. You didn't really have any ill will towards her. And then you saw what she was saying about you in the game. And that's okay. Got it.
Yeah.
But I'm sure from her perspective, or if from your perspective, if you knew how much she hates you and you can get her out of the game, that's a win, even if it's going against the numbers.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this. We're talking about this mishmash alliance now, where you have the old Calabaugh plus Malcolm and Denise plus potentially Penner and Lisa. Who do you think is calling the shots out of this group? Because it looked to me, well, you tell me who you think, and I'll tell you who I think then.
On which side?
On the new Calabaugh side, the side that voted out Artis.
So I actually think that it's more Denise and Malcolm and Carter.
Carter?
Right? Do I have it right?
Interesting.
I got the right players, right?
Oh, well, you're talking about the right side. I don't know who's really calling the shots or not.
I think that there's a stronger, you know, a little bit of the conversations that we've seen of them in the jungle.
Yeah.
Because then who's left after that? Then it's Penner.
Yeah.
And who else? Penner.
Now there's Scoopin' with them and Lisa.
Right, but Lisa's on the other side, right? So it's Denise, Malcolm, yeah. Carter.
Well, I'm bringing her over by proxy now because the other side is Pete and Abby Maria. So I think that Lisa is going to, you know, either she knows what's up or she's going to stop and smell the roses now or smell the coffee because there is no alliance on the other side anymore. It's Pete and Abby Maria, and she best be switching over for the new side and coming along with Scoopin'.
Yeah, I was absolutely shocked at her vote. I mean, let's be real. I love her, but there's this naivete. I mean, this is a game.
Now you're like Abby Maria.
This is a game, and this is not about am I loyal or what will it say about me as a person afterwards or who am I in my life story and I'm going to redeem myself here for my entire – I mean, it's not what it's about. And I know it can be for certain people. It certainly looks like it's that for her. But yeah, I was shocked at the fact that she hadn't voted. I was perplexed at the vote at the end. I mean, I really thought that, I thought somebody else was going home. I did not think it was going
to
be Artis.
Yeah. Cause it seemed like the last couple of weeks, Lisa did seem to have her finger on the pulse, even from before the merge happened, that she knew what everybody was doing the last couple of weeks. Was it that she was just voting for show against Penner for whatever reason, whatever that show was, whether it was for the jury, which is RC and Jeff Kent, so that doesn't make a lot of sense, or for the people that are going on the jury, whether it's that she didn't want to make artists feel like she was screwing him over, whatever the reason, or was she just really blindsided?
Yeah, I don't understand the rhyme or reason. I think sometimes people suddenly feel like, hey, I want to play the game, and I'm here, and I'm living this. And in her mind, she kind of explained it at Tribal last night, and it made sense on some level. But, you know, she was in her own little special cute way trying to play the game and try to show that she has what it takes to play the game. And I definitely respect that.
Yeah, well, I think she does have what it takes, but the question is, where are we going with this? What is the master plan here? Because if it's to vote with Avi Maria and Pete, that is not getting you anywhere.
No, I totally agree. And can we talk about advanced Penner psychology?
Oh, absolutely. Let's go for it. Take us there.
Oh, my God. So I kept thinking, like, I mean, talk about brilliance. Seriously, Rob, you got to give huge props. I mean, I kept listening, and it got better with each line. And I kept thinking about it today, and I was like, so my Penner imitation is, I was like, who is he sounding
yes.
like? Now, I'll tell you who I'm going to draw a parallel with, except he wasn't evil in it, but it was close. It sounded to me like Anthony Hopkins in the
Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs, talking to Clarice.
Yes. Okay.
It was almost like Clarice. It must have been hard for you as a child. You know? Always trying to please everyone, Clarice. Always trying to be pretty, Clarice. How difficult, Clarice. I mean, he even had the pauses down to just. Almost science. It was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Loved.
Yeah, he was good. He's like, I know what it's like for you. I've seen that. I've been there. This is my business too. You've got to understand, Lisa. I'm with you. Let's go. Let's do this. And he's really good. Yeah, talked it out. He's like Jeff Probst on the talk show.
I was just going to say that. I was thinking that today. He was like, you know, he was giving Jeff Probst a lesson on that one because it was brilliant. I mean, he really got in her head and pushed every single button. And I really honestly thought that all of that was going to really powerfully resonate for her and really tip the scale. I thought it was absolutely masterful.
Yeah.
Hats off to
yeah. Well, and Penner even said, I'm playing my ass off right now, which was great. But
which
as
is so true. That's why we're loving it.
Yeah, but as Stephen pointed out last night, none of it worked. Like, the whole episode was about Penner working on Lisa, and then she doesn't even vote with them. Scoopin' does.
I love it, though. But he's playing all the angles, and they probably didn't show us more of what was going on with Scoopin' to give it all away. I thought it was going to be classic Survivor, where they were leading us down that path, making us believe that it was going to be a certain outcome. And I was already saying, no way, it's not going to happen. What a bummer. I was absolutely devastated. I thought Penner was going home. And lo and behold, it was actually, holy cow, it wasn't Lisa, but, you know, there was a huge swing.
All right, tell me right now, did Mike Scoopin tell Lisa before the vote that he was voting with the other guys?
I want to say yes. I want to say yes just because he has come across as such a Christian man. Mm-hmm. And he did say that, you know, he felt completely indebted and had to say that to her. Telling her or not telling her, you know, I think that he did, but I'd have to go back and rewind and see the expression on her face. She did seem, if I remember correctly, I think she seemed surprised, didn't she?
I don't know. She is an actress, though. I think he did, and I think that she voted the other way knowing that they had the votes, because I think that she was worried after the last episode, after the whole thing, she was going to be seen as somebody being sneaky. Because she said it a couple times. Look, I tried to make a move last week. It didn't work. Okay, I was playing the game. But I don't think that I think she feels like, okay, well, now if this is 2 weeks in a row, I'm going to be seen in a negative light either by the viewers or the people in the game. And she wasn't willing to do that 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It could be true. But at this point, it's almost like a moot point, right?
Even
I mean,
at Tribal Council, like, you would think that if she was, you know, playing the game from, you know, in a totally what was best for her way, at the point where Abby Maria calls her out, she sort of is like, you see what I'm dealing with? Like, she was sort of like pointing it out to everybody. Look, see, this is what I'm dealing with every day. But wouldn't that be enough to get her to switch her vote at that point? Not that people are switching their votes to tribal council ever, but wouldn't that be enough to get her to vote against Abby Maria and Pete?
That's what I thought. I was convinced. That's why I had to wait all the way till the end to see who voted where, because it was totally unclear to me. I thought there would have been both votes. I would have thought would have gone over. So when it was only by one, I was utterly perplexed.
Yeah. Marty, you knew a thing or two about the hidden immunity idol from your season. Now, there was a lot of talk about the idol so far this season, a lot of idols being played the last couple of weeks, a lot of idols not being played the last couple of weeks. What did you think of last week's real standoff at Tribal Council where everybody's pulling out an idol? Jeff says, hey, does anybody else have an idol? Abby Maria's showing her idol. Now, you were somebody who you told your whole tribe, hey, look, I've got the idol. So talk about what did you like how that all went down last week with all the idols?
I thought it was great comedy. I thought it was, you know, as far as Survivor goes, like, holy cow, like that's never quite happened that way. I disclosed that I had the idol back when I did, because I was threatened by two people that knew I had it. Jimmy Johnson threatened to tell the whole tribe if I didn't. And then when we got switched up and went over to the other tribe, Jane was definitely not on my side, and I knew she would tell them, and then I'd be characterized as somebody that was being deceitful and hiding something. So I didn't like having to tell, but I took the initiative to share it because I knew I was going to get screwed anyway and they would disclose it. So at face value, when these guys all revealed their idols, I was like, holy cow, what the hell is going on? And then when you see that, you know, they showed them but then didn't use them and bluffed and it actually worked in their favor because nobody could figure out how they would cast votes for people knowing that these other folks had the idols, kind of saved everyone's ass. And the fact that they didn't play them, I thought was really ballsy, and it ended up being pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And it really is tough to split the vote in a scenario like this. I mean, how would you even attempt to do that? Penner totally got confused or, you know, we've given Penner a lot of praise. Now, let's give him a little medicine here, because the idea of I voted for Abby Maria because I got mad, inexcusable. I mean, this is a three-time Survivor player. What is he doing there? This is the rookiest of rookie mistakes of I voted for Abby Maria because she pissed me off.
Yeah, I think even Penner pretty much admitted what a JV move that was, right?
Yeah, well, he was sort of like, they did the math in his head, and he's like, oh, so that would have been the tie? It would have been fine. You know, he's sort of like,
he's like, I did that?
Yeah, whatever. Okay, whatever. Let's move on. Poor Jeff Kett.
Absolutely.
He wouldn't have minded a tie. He wouldn't have minded picking a rock instead of getting voted out.
Now, if you talk about Jeff Kent for a second, the one thing that I do have to say about that is that I absolutely love the fact that here is a guy that made $60 million during his Major League Baseball career, and that he is still as passionate and still as pissed off when he showed up on the jury yesterday about a game that for him, you know, after taxes is $600K chump change. I mean, it says a lot about the game, and that part I absolutely adore. So, you know, in this season, I actually kind of psyched that he was on there, and since nobody really knew that he was a player, kind of exciting.
Now, his move when Jeff Kent showed up was sort of the opposite of Jimmy Johnson, and it's hard to do we know for sure if nobody recognized Jimmy Johnson, was Jimmy Johnson going to say, "Hey, I'm Jimmy Thompson"? There already was a Jimmy T. He would have come up with something else. But was Jimmy Johnson going to pretend he wasn't Jimmy Johnson if nobody recognized him?
Interesting. I mean, I think he should have, and I think you always should if you go into the game being somebody like that, because it's definitely not going to play in your favor if people know that A, you're either extremely wealthy or a celebrity. I just it's going to be something that differentiates you and that creates a chink in the armor, I think.
Maybe Jimmy Johnson should have shaved his head before he went on Survivor.
Yeah, without the coif, it definitely would have been a lot easier.
Like, he won a podcast award. That would be great. But I don't think he would have done that either. I think that he'd rather have not gone than shaved his head.
Well, for sure. I don't think there's anything you could have given him enough to shave his head.
Who has better hair, Jimmy Johnson or you, Marty?
He definitely had better hair. I mean, mine took on a life of its own, but, you know, Jimmy actually, no, he's got the total do. I mean, it was Jimmy Johnson the whole way.
Okay. I like Jeff Kent this season. I thought it was great. Some people didn't like Jeff Kent this season, but I feel like what more could you want out of a guy who's a baseball player in such a brutal season? He could have easily just said at any point, like, I do not need this money. I do not need this aggravation. Get me out of here. And he never did.
No, I loved it. I mean, I have watched the only one that I watched videos, you know, on the CBS site after Ponderosa was his. And I was so pleased to see him just so utterly pissed off. And I just love that. This game is still so riveting, so intense, so that somebody can take it so competitively. I feel the same way about, and maybe you do too. There's not an episode that I watch that I don't get absolute butterflies in my stomach and think about, you know, how would I have played? What would I have done? And really feel like you're in the game every time. And here's a guy who, you know, is absolutely fanatical about it. I think it just says a ton about what a great, brilliant, super cool game this is, even after, you know, 25 plus seasons or whatever.
Yeah, well, I think you sum up exactly what is the heart of the show and what the appeal is of the show after 25 seasons. I mean, you don't watch a sitcom or a procedural drama and say, oh, how would I have solved that case if I was out there? But every single person who watches Survivor in almost every instance says, okay, what would I have done if I was in that scenario? How would I handle that? Or, oh, this guy is like this person I know. And it's just such a relatable show, and it still works after all this time. Now, let me ask you about somebody else from this season and make another Nicaragua comparison. You played with somebody on your season who would also often speak their mind a la an Abby Maria, and also piss off some people in the tribe in Nayanka. So you have a little bit of an experience with this. I mean, what's that like as a player when you have somebody who's just telling people off in the tribe and just has no sort of inner monologue saying, hey, don't say this. Don't tell this person to their face that they're naive and gullible. Is that a good thing if you're another player in the game?
Well, I mean, this whole game is about trying to overcome a lot of times what your natural instincts might be. And in the real world, nobody would put up with that. And we were the older tribe, and people like me or Danny, you know, we were like, you know, you brought up respecting people and, you know, and all that. So, you know, if you let yourself get really tweaked by it and you speak your mind about it, then it doesn't work in your favor. But it makes living under those conditions 10 times worse. I mean, like, I love Jimmy T, but my God, he was no Nayanka, but he just drove you crazy all day. And it just really tests your nerves when you're out there to have somebody like that that's just, you know, being such a pain in the ass. So, and it just pisses you off because people will, you know, as part of their strategy, think that that's a great person to bring farther along in the game because no one's going to vote for them in the final three.
Yeah, at what point does everybody start saying, look, oh, I got to get Abby with me to the end because she's going to be, you know, giving people the finger in the final three. And she appears to have no ability to understand at all how to win the game. And are people also thinking the same thing about Nayanka on your season?
With regards to Nayanka, I mean, I think the smart players were thinking absolutely to bring her to the end because no one would give her the final vote. But our season was so fractured and fragmented too that I don't know. Maybe only two or three people were really thinking that far down the road. I don't know that Abby's really thinking about how can I win this game. She's playing day to day, as many of us do. Like, my God, as long as I don't get voted out tonight, please let me just make it another day. But it's hard. It's hard to survive when you're like that and be liked and be able to get a single vote at the end. I mean, look at Sash. Sash was an incredible player. I had nothing but respect for him. And not a single vote, you know?
Yeah, and he was one of those guys that wanted to take Nayanka to the end. He could have used her.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have huge respect for Sasha's game.
How about this reward challenge that they went on last night? I love the reward challenge. I thought it was not – the actual challenge was great, but the actual reward I thought was also fantastic. Much better than, you know, oh, they're going to have a barbecue or whatever, go drink a bunch of, Jolt Cola or whatever the hell they give them for a reward. I thought this was really, really cool. And something they haven't done, it seems like, in forever on Survivor is get them out there with the locals and, you know, bring some goodwill and do something good.
I thought it was awesome. I think it also speaks a little bit to some of the things that Jeff Probst does in these regions and some of the charities that he supports. When you're out there, as you know, and you're so deprived and you don't get to see family or really anybody, you're very disattached. To suddenly be exposed to people, anybody like that, and to be able to actually participate in an act of kindness has got to be, it's got to bring almost tears to your eyes when you're just so emotionally drained. I mean, I remember being out there and Lynn showed up between in one of the medical tents on the way either out to a challenge or coming back. I remember she just walked into the tent and I just burst into tears, just like, you know, it was like, oh my God, a nice face out of nowhere. It just was so those things are really can really pump
Lynn Spillman emotion. You saw and you burst into tears?
Yeah, she came into to see, you know, yes, how I was doing, and it was totally unexpected. I wasn't expecting to see anybody like that, and she was so kind of kind, you know, and came in and just was like, wanted to see how I was feeling and how I was doing, and yeah, it was like the weirdest thing. All of a sudden, my eyes just welled up, and it was like seeing somebody from the real world, you know, after being out there for whatever it was, almost 4 weeks.
And for the uninitiated, that is the head honcho of Survivor casting, the wonderful Lynn Spillman. And for Marty, I think that 98% of Survivors actually do burst into tears when they see Lynn Spillman. They say, please, put me back on the show.
Yes, I've been there too. And One of these days, maybe.
I'm crying here. All right, let's get into some of these questions that I have from our fans from the Facebook fan page. Our listeners submitted a good 100 questions for you, Marty. A pretty impressive haul. So wow. Let's see. Let's jump into how about Sandra Schmidt Brook? Let's start off here. Wants to know, does Lisa's game remind you of Holly Hoffman's game at all? How about that? The older now. We'll say older, not old, the older mom who's out there has a mini breakdown early on in the game. We've seen this happen before. Compare Lisa and Holly Hoffman a little bit.
I think that's totally fair. And I think that, you know, it's easily just as I underestimated Holly, I'm sure that they've underestimated Lisa. And all of a sudden, bam, you know, you've got somebody that's either could have been a swing vote last night and is suddenly going to change the fate of some of the players that thought they had her under their thumb. So I think she's faced some of the same challenges. I think where they come from and what they how they were raised has influenced how they make decisions and what they do with regards to the game. So I think that's a very fair comparison. And you know, Holly had this very golly gee South Dakota code of honor type thing, and she for the most part played very straight up that way, and I think Lisa's struggling to do the same.
All right, so Jeremiah Panhorst, he's a good friend of the podcast. He's the host of the Mad Men podcast. He wants to know, does Marty believe that a three tribe game is more exciting to watch and make it harder for the players to take a solid five to the end? What are your thoughts on the three tribes? Because I loved it.
I always think, for me, it it makes me nervous, I guess, because the dynamics are, I tend to think the dynamics of two tribes are a little more predictable. Mm-hmm. And with three, there's just less numbers and then there's, I think, less of an ability to persuade people within your tribe because the numbers are smaller. And then all of a sudden, if you lose one or two, I think you can end up just being hosed and the whole game can go down the drain. Now, you know,
believe me. Yeah, I know.
This season is evidence of to the contrary, you know, or it's been all over the place. But that's the part that makes me nervous about it. Like, you know, two or three challenges and you're all of a sudden like, crap, it's over.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's better after the merge, not as good pre-merge.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, take the good with the bad. But, you know, it's probably better because, you know, the whole season could stink after the merge if it's, you know, if it gets totally one-sided. So I think the risk-reward, I think, is in it the favor of the three tribes.
Yeah, I think it creates a better dynamic for things to get shaken up as we've seen it here. And it depends on what that post-merge makeup looks like. But I think it has better chances of being more interesting, fun, and dynamic.
So Eric Laval wants to know, another Nicaragua comparison, what are the odds of Carter Fabioing this season? Could Carter pull a Fabio here?
Yeah, so nothing against Carter. It's always hard to, you know, speak out about players. But there's a guy who in the beginning I was like, God, this guy seems like there's just nothing going on upstairs at all. Like he's having trouble articulating anything. And I didn't understand what the hell he was doing on the show. And now you start to see him speaking more and pulling together some thoughts on the game. I don't know who he is or what he is, and I obviously know a lot more about Fabio from the game and after the game. And Fabio was actually a really, really smart, shrewd guy. And I think just as Probst said it, I think he duded his way to the end. You know, he was Spicoli.
So could Carter do the same thing? Is there more?
I don't think so. And I think that it'd be, I haven't seen it yet, but, you know, you have to remember that Fabio, I think, won, like, the last three immunity mm-hmm. challenges in a row, and they were not easy. They were really, really tough. And I haven't seen Carter excel that way, and you know as well as I do that when it comes down to, you know, final five, et cetera, it's going to be all about who excels and who makes it through those challenges.
And Fabio got a lot of airtime, too, on your season. Like, Fabio had an arc. He had a storyline where Carter is more of a Purple Kelly than a Fabio to this point.
There you go. You've, I think, been as diplomatic as you can be.
Okay, let's make another Nicaragua comparison. Eric Benjamin, apparently there's a lot of Nicaragua comparisons. We could recast the whole season here. Eric Benjamin wants to know, do you think that Denise is similar to your ally, Dr. Jill? And who would you choose to align with if you were on this season? Now, I've also felt that same comparison is a good one, that Dr. Jill to Denise. How about that?
So totally. And, you know, the beauty of being having been on the show is that every season I tend to like pick one or two people that I can relate to. And, you know, you can reach out to them on Facebook and have conversations, which is actually kind of cool. Right. Like after episodes, a lot of people would love to be able to say, oh, I chatted with Denise or I chatted with Malcolm. And, you know, obviously, you know, I go back and forth with Penner, but I gravitated immediately to Denise. Just there's just something about her and that reminds me a lot about Jill. And it's both the age, intensity, both fierce, fierce competitors, strong women. And I knew that I wanted to align myself with women. So and both with her and Eve from the get-go. I just think it's always super important as a guy to have a super strong chick alliance for sure. And Jill and Denise, I'd see enormous parallels there.
Yeah, Dr. Jill, she really is one of those ones that, you know, you guys got down in the numbers and it's always like a what might have been, what could have been. But she really is like, just like Denise got down in the numbers too. She easily, Calabaugh, that one they voted off Katie, if they knew what's up, they could have voted Denise off right there. That'd be the end of Denise. We talk about her as, you know, the same as Dr. Jill, goes out the same part of the game as Dr. Jill does. But now post-merge, the world's her oyster.
Totally new ball game, and I absolutely love it. So, yeah, and, you know, this, I think sort of same demographics. Jill is, like, from Erie, Pennsylvania, you know, very Christian family. They're hunters. She's a doctor. Her husband's a doctor. And, you know, it just sort of seems like Denise is the same. Hardworking Iowa, good family, strong roots, just really honest-to-goodness person. I love it. You know, I liked Christina Kell, too, and in Rob's season as well, kind of identified with her. So same kind of thing.
I liked her too. I thought she was good. Here we go. I got this question in a lot of variations for you, Marty. Fred Runala wants to know, hey, Marty, who would get your Dumber Than a Bag of Hammers award this season? All right, you got to give it out, Marty. The Dumber Than a Bag of Hammers award for this season. Who's getting it?
Oh, man, we have to go back to the beginning, I think, because I got to think of some of the earlier boots, because I don't really see anybody right now that's dumber than a bag of hammers, probably earlier in the season. And, you know, God, I hope Carter doesn't listen to these things, but I would have given it to Carter, I think, earlier in the season.
In what particular moment?
Just like some of the sound bites of him talking to Jeff Kent, you know, it was like, I think, we should, okay. I mean, it just sounded to me, there were parts of it I wasn't sure he was speaking English. I had a really tough time understanding it. But I mean, does anybody sort of stand out to you like that? Oh, well, hold on a second. Hold on. This is Angie's season, right?
Yes.
It just seems so long ago. So I'm sorry. Carter's completely exonerated.
Angie, dumber than a bag of hammers.
I mean, that goes down as maybe like a Survivor, you know, like maybe dumbest thing ever said on Survivor ever, period.
Why? When they asked if you want some cookies?
Yeah. What's cookies?
What would make this tribe better right now? What's the one thing this tribe needs right now was the question. And she said, cookies.
Yeah.
Let's see. How about let's go around. Here's one, a little off the beaten path. Tyler Wallace wants to know, ask Marty what he thought of Kim Spradlin's game. We didn't get to hear from you during Survivor One World. Were you as impressed with Kim Spradlin as we were?
I mean, how can't you be? I mean, it was amazing. And what I liked about that season, which you don't get to see that often, which is sort of how I would have loved to have played my season, which is not necessarily the recipe for winning, by the way, but I love seeing strong players at the end. I don't like seeing coattail riders and bringing weak people or people are going to get vote, you know, that are not going to get the votes. It just, I don't know, just inherently bugs me. I love the competitiveness and I would have loved to have gone to the finals in my season, for example, with Jill and or Brenda or Sash. And when I look at that season, I love the fact that those three women were total studs, really strong and stuck together, which is hard to do, and somehow persevered, made it all the way to the end. I thought it was really, really awesome. I thought she was amazing. I mean, how can you not? She was really, really outstanding.
Yeah, Brenda was really, really good. So this is a good question. This is a good segue into this. So Christian Zicardo wants to know, Marty, you were one of my all-time favorite survivors. Why is it that people say Nicaragua was the worst season, even after seasons like Redemption Island and South Pacific, when after the merge there was no pagonging and plenty of blindsides, Brenda, Jane, Benry, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we've talked about some people who really knew how to play the game on your season between yourself and the aforementioned Dr. Jill, who, you know, maybe because, you know, somebody like this didn't get to go far into the game. Brenda, Sash, people that knew how to play the game, you know, Holly Hoffman, Fabio was a likable guy. What is it? Why do people give Nicaragua such a bad rap?
I don't know. You know, in part it's, I gave it a bad rap, but I think I'm a little bit jaded. I mean, and I told Jeff this, and I don't think Jeff liked it when he called me before the finale and he asked me and I told him, yeah, that I was disappointed in our season. I thought it was a bad season. I think he really took it personally. And what I meant was, I mean, obviously I would want to be on a great season. So it was a little bit self-deprecating. I would love to have said, I thought our season was great. Listen, we had two people quit our season. Yeah. And if you're kind of a purist and a lover of the game, I think that's awful.
It.
There can be nothing worse than people quitting. And how about having two people quit? I mean, I really thought that was bad. Where I think I get jaded is that when I landed in the game, I was such a fanatical follower of the game and the intricacy and the game playing that, and Jeff gave me a hard time about this during the game, which was I wanted to play the game and I wanted the game to get going and I wanted everybody to be playing the game. And you need to slow down and realize that not everyone's going to be playing the game and that that's maybe a good thing. And you should just relax and take it easy. But I just saw a lot of people that I felt were just so goofy and had no idea what was going on in the way we were playing the game. And I was actually trying to help some of them, like Jimmy T, hang in there longer and play with us, but they just didn't sort of understand what was happening. So, so I think I was a little bit hard on our season that way. And I mean, if there had been more Brendas and more Sashes and more Jills, I think it would have been a far more interesting season. I mean, you know, we had Purple Kelly and, you know, just, you know, folks that I didn't see them really getting into it and contributing to what could have been like just a more crazy season,
yeah.
More interesting.
Here, let me do the autopsy real quick on Survivor Nicaragua. Let me give you, you hit the big one. People didn't like it that people quit. That was a big one that really left a bad taste in people's mouth. You guys came right after the heroes versus villains. If you guys were, say, Survivor 24 and it wasn't on the heels of what I think is probably the best season of Survivor as far as gameplay goes, that really hurt you because, you know, you came. How are you supposed to come in? How are you going to come in after that, after heroes versus villains?
I totally agree. And I've said
no all stars. You know, people were excited for Jimmy Johnson. Then he's not around there for a while. I think people like Dr. Jill and you. And, you know, Dr. Jill goes out pre-merge. And Brenda, I think, you know, Brenda is somebody that she gets to the final two, final three. I think you got another Parvati on your hands. And she goes out. You have all these people quit. Now, Medallion of Power, that was also not a good one. But I think the coming after heroes versus villains, I think that was really a overlooked reason why people frown on Nicaragua.
Yeah, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. And I've said that before, too. And having been someone that saw that season, it just could not stack up to that.
Okay. Ken Raskoff says, tell Marty hi for me. All right. There you go.
He's everything for me, man. He is the man for me, Ken Raskoff. He is my handler and put me on the map, so
and
to
he
speak.
Is,
and he grilled my ass, too, in the process.
And he is the man.
Yep.
One more Nicaragua comparison. John DeBono wants to know, am I the only one who thinks that Malcolm looks like a younger and prettier Jimmy T? How about that? Would you say, does Malcolm look like a young Jimmy T?
I think Jimmy T would love to hear that. a much slender, younger Jimmy T that doesn't, sing all night and drive you nuts. And I do still love Jimmy T to this day. So he is a great guy. So I think that's a great compliment to Jimmy
all
T.
All right. So if Malcolm and Jimmy T stood next to each other, would you say father and son?
Sure.
Yes.
We'd have to ask Malcolm about that.
Malcolm T. Okay. All right. Here we go. Here's from Jeff Spence. He wants to know, we all want to give Penner the benefit of the doubt and assume that he had a brilliant move. Last week when he voted for Abby Maria, all of the people we put on our thinking hat, we said, oh, Penner, he's playing such a good game. He must have voted for Abby Maria because he wanted to sow the seeds of discourse throughout the alliance. And what a great way to get. And no, it turned out he was just pissed off. So whenever we think that moves that they're making are part of a great strategy, the explanations do kind of let us down. Bottom line, is anybody playing a good strategic game, or is everyone out there just by dumb luck? What do you think, Marty? Are people really playing the game, or are they just getting lucky?
No, I think people are definitely playing the game, and there's some that are playing it harder than others, but right now, absolutely playing the game. I mean, You look at Peter from the very beginning. I mean, I think he was playing too hard. But again, I was just as guilty of that. And you're overwhelmed. And the first time you're on the show, you just, you think you're in utter control. You think you're invincible. You're half delusional. And he was, you know, playing sort of an over-the-top game, which I thought, wow, this guy's going to go very deep. So I think he was definitely playing the game. Penner, scooping, absolutely. Denise has been lying low. But as we get to a merge and post-merge, people are definitely starting to kick it into high gear. And you see it happening in this episode. So I think people are playing hardcore right now. Absolutely. That's what's making it so exciting.
Well, we saw in this season, RC had to deal with Abby Maria, who was somewhat irrational, and Pete was sort of stirring the pot. You kind of dealt with that on your tribe. You had some unstable elements there early on in the beginning, especially some unstable anti-Marty elements. How do you deal with that when people are just deciding, look, I don't like you, and I don't want to talk to you, I don't want to deal with you, and I'm coming after you?
You have to be able to deal with it quietly and be able to really bite your tongue and make sure that you're thinking about the numbers and being really steady. And that's what we kind of did by making Tyrone feel like he was the boss. And then Jill, myself, and Eve and Danny, finally had the numbers. And that's all you have to be focused on, and make sure that you don't turn into a ticking time bomb because you allow yourself to react emotionally. As soon as you have the numbers, it's a different story, and you can behave differently after.
I follow Tyrone on Facebook, and I'm pretty sure that he might actually indeed be the boss.
I just want to know where and how can anyone possibly find as many motivational quips, quotes, websites, and little sound bites, because I didn't know it was even, you know, humanly possible to have that.
He's
many.
On fire, but I think his caps lock key might be stuck.
Totally. He is Mr. Caps. I love that guy, though. He is a very positive human being, and you see it in every single thing he posts all the time. We've gotten some good yucks on some stuff that he's posted recently.
Yeah, he's still keeping it 100. Enan Hennigan wants to know, are contestants less worried? This is a more of a philosophical question. Are the contestants less worried about winning their initial season, knowing Survivor is headed towards more and more returnees, and thinking more about establishing themselves as a resonant character of a franchise? Now, Marty, you are a modern day Survivor player. You're not an old school Survivor player, an old fart like myself. You are a one of these modern day Survivor players. Do the modern day Survivor players go out there and say, I need to make my big splash here so they bring me back? Or are you guys all thinking about trying to win the game?
Gosh, when I was out there, I definitely was not thinking ahead and coming back. My God, not for a second. Not until I was voted off did that even cross my mind, really. I will say, and I always did say this, which was, and I think Abby's playing along the same lines I was, which is I definitely did not want to be, you know, when the audience is looking at the finale and they bring out all the tribes, and you invariably look around and you will see one or two people and you're like, huh, who's that guy or who's that gal? Like, to me, that would have been the kiss of death. In other words, I definitely was in it to win, and I think that came through. But I was in it to have fun and to at least make sure that when that finale came, that, you know, when I walked out with our tribes, that that's Marty, you know, that I had left some kind of imprint in the way that I played the game. And I tried to be fun and funny and inject humor and facial expressions and try to bring, you know, some gold to tribal. And that's kind of how I thought about it. I really wasn't thinking beyond it. And listen, I'm a family guy. I have kids. I have a professional career. So it was not about, you know, what can I do here that creates a character that's then going to catapult me into some other entertainment industry or anything otherwise. So
now, is there somebody that you would say that you can definitively feel like what was one of these modern day survivors that played a certain way with the idea of, hey, I'm just going to worry about making the splash and not worry about winning the game?
Yeah, I think a little bit, which I'm not into it. And hats off to these guys. I mean, because it does sound like criticism, but I have not been into the old kooky man characters that they bring mm-hmm. on.
Okay.
Just doesn't do it for me. And I found that some of those people are just, you know, trying to be just absolutely kooks. And it's not, I mean, that's kind of the beauty of Survivor is you see a lot of what people really are. I mean, I don't understand how anybody goes out there and comes back and then says, oh, that wasn't me at all. Never. I was playing a part. I mean, it's almost impossible.
I would think so. I think the game does bring, as Artis said, the game reveals who you are as a human being. And I do think that it is tough to, you know, put up a facade for so long.
Yeah, I think it ends up accentuating and highlighting good and bad things about us all when we're out there. You're frazzled and it exposes a lot of things and it can be highly emotional and, I think that's usually the case. So those kind of characters for me are people that I think are really trying to really put on sort of a show, and I'm not as cool with that.
Okay, Marty, anything else that you want to drop on us about this season before we part ways?
I just want to say go Penner, go Scoopin, go Denise, and loving the season. Absolutely loving the season. Just so proud and happy that these guys can still make such a great show after all these years. It just, it gives you hope. You know, there's not many shows that can say that. I just, always fascinated by it. So, and love talking to you because, I know you share in the fascination and the interest, and it's, always fun to talk to folks that, that have that same thought about it.
All right. Well, great stuff, Marty. We know you really know the game and love talking about it. And that's why it's always fun to hear from you. All the best, Marty.
You bet. Thanks, Rob. We'll talk to you
later. All right. Take care, buddy.
Bye.
All right, everybody. There you have it. That was Marty Piombo, Survivor Nicaragua. And for appearing on Rob as a Podcast, Marty will receive a Tundra hat courtesy of Adas. And everybody over at Tundra Gear, go to robhasatundrahat.com. You can get your very own Tundra hat for you. It makes a great gift. And Adas has set up a coupon exclusively for the listeners of Rob Has a Podcast. Use the coupon code ROBHASACOUPON. Save 25% on a Tundra hat, and you will be the envy of all of your friends unless you wear a Jets Tundra hat, and then people will probably make fun of you and mock you. Exactly in the same way that Nicole Sesternino mocks me relentlessly.
It's true.
It is true. It is true. Welcome back, Nicole.
You're a little better than the Jets, though.
Thank you.
You're
thank
welcome.
You. Not.
You're welcome.
Talk about damning with faint praise. Anyway, so here's Nicole. Welcome to the podcast this week, Nicole.
Thank you very much.
How are you doing?
Fantastic.
Yes. Are you? How's your week going?
I'm glad it's over. So my week is done.
Your week is done.
Yeah.
The podcast voting has closed, Nicole.
Thank God.
Are you happy that the podcast voting is over?
No, I'm going to have Ajita until January.
You're going to be on pins and needles.
Yes, I'm going to be throwing up in my mouth.
Because you don't want me to shave my head.
I do not want you to shave your head.
Do you want Dan Giesling to shave my head?
I don't want anybody to shave your head.
Now, it's not going to be like with a Bic razor. I'm not going to like shave it like a cue ball.
It doesn't matter. You do not have the head to be a skinhead.
All right. We don't need to start this all over again.
Mm-hmm. Although
speaking,
I did add something.
Yes.
If you shave your head, I will be single. And I will be going on The Bachelorette.
Okay, sure, sure.
I will be putting in my application.
They have plenty of married women on The Bachelorette. speaking of people with bald heads, Nicole.
Baldies.
Yes. Well, way back when, back mm-hmm. in September.
Yes. Hold on, let me get my wine.
Yes, get your wine. Back in September, we made our picks for who is going to win Survivor Philippines. And the vaunted Nicole.
Yes.
Who claims to have all of the best predictions.
Yes.
Your pick, Mr. Artis Sylvester.
Yes.
Is out of the game.
Yes, he is.
While my pick, Denise Stapley, is cruising.
Well, you know what? You can't win them all. And if you go back and you listen to the podcast, I said, I think Artis is going to win. I think that's a bad pick, though.
Okay, well, that is, now you're talking out of both sides of your mouth.
I did pick him.
Because if
but
he
I did agree it was a bad pick.
If he did win, you'd be like, oh, I called it.
Well, yes.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways, Nicole.
Yes, but in fairness also, this man is not the same person from the pre-interviews.
Why? You liked him better in the
he
pre-interviews.
He was much different.
Well, you should listen to my interview with him.
I heard about it.
Yes.
Yes, a different man. Totally different man.
Okay, sorry, Nicole. Yeah. This might just be the season where I am better at picking than you are.
You might have a better pick, but I doubt you're going to win.
Okay, we'll see.
Sorry, Denise.
We'll see. I know you're keeping a close eye on everything that happens on Survivor Philippines.
I am.
Yes. Yes. All right, Nicole, you ready to hear some of the comments from everybody? All the survivors, all the tweets, everything
am
going
I ever?
On?
Yes.
Okay. All right, Nicole. So here's Jeff Probst this week.
Yes.
We'll lead off with Jeff Probst, who even tweeted about Rob as a podcast.
Did he ask where I was on the podcast?
He did not.
Oh.
He did not. Let me give Jeff a little criticism. He asked for something during the podcast. Didn't use hashtag RHAP in his tweet. But
oh,
he said,
Jeffy.
Had a blast on at Rob Cesternino podcast. He's a good interviewer. Exclamation point.
Fantastic. Congratulations.
There you go.
Love bug.
Yes. Not the Rob that sucks.
Well, he didn't say that.
Okay. Fair enough. but no, this is, let me get into some serious stuff here, though.
Uh-huh.
Lisa Welchel, at Lisa Welchel on Twitter,
yes,
tweeted this
week.
Doctor just called with blood test results. I have West Nile.
Oh, my God.
I'm fine, just tired. Takes a year to recover. Unhappy face.
Sad face.
Sad face.
I'm having a sad face.
That is a sad
face.
You
survivors really put yourselves out there for a lot of things.
She didn't get it on Survivor.
Oh, then that's just bad luck.
Yeah, I don't think she got it on Survivor. I think she got it after she came home from Survivor.
Oh.
I think.
At least she could say it was like a battle wound. She got West Nile from playing Survivor.
No, they drug you up and they give you a bunch of inoculations.
Unless but people still come back with like parasites and stuff.
Yeah, but not like, I don't think this is from Survivor.
Okay.
Then she tweeted, I've been very touched by all the sweet tweets. Other than tired, I'm feeling fine, expecting a full recovery. So grateful for you. Thanks.
Oh, well, that's nice. You're welcome.
I even tweeted to Lisa Welchel.
Did she tweet you back?
She did.
What'd she say?
She said, thank you.
Mm-hmm. She had no idea who you were, though.
She knows. First of all, I've met her before. So
she
knows,
remembers that moment.
She knows who I am.
Okay.
And then she listened to the podcast with Jeff Pro.
Oh, she did. How do you
also
know?
She tweeted me. That it's not hard to follow this story, Nicole.
It is hard to follow.
You're
going to
get
not
cut
following.
Off.
I had two sips. Stop that.
Cut off. All right, Nicole. You want to hear some the other survivors? You know, I'm trying to follow what exactly happened here with some of the stuff on Twitter. Apparently, there was a lot of tweets back and forth with RC tweeting to people, and honestly, I can't really follow what's going on here. So, if you want to find out more about what RC was tweeting during the show, who's been a very solid jury member so far, you could follow her at @RC_survivor. I think she's really mixing it up with people on the Twitter about what she put together.
She was also kind of tooting her own horn about how the past two challenges were the Tandang tribe, and I guess they lost. And she's like, I see a pattern here. The last two challenges, they lost. I wasn't there.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, you weren't there. You were in the jury.
In the jury. And looking very nice on the jury, I will say.
Oh, very
maybe,
well.
Perhaps.
Some people clean up well.
Best dressed jury member of all time.
Ooh la la.
She's got a lot of runway here, a lot of episodes left, and hopefully enough outfits. Because when you go on Survivor, you don't think, I need to pack, you know, 9 jury outfits.
That is true.
You know, you don't think the fact. Maybe she did.
Yeah.
Maybe she did. Maybe she's rewriting the book right now.
That's a good thing.
We'll see. Best dressed jury member of all time.
Doing the runway on the jury.
Well, this could be a very sneaky way to get into the mix here for Miss Survivor 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Because while everybody else on Survivor is going to be island attractive, you would think, you know, RC could go business professional the rest of the way, get 9 tribal councils, full makeup, dressed up. Could make a strong impression with the voters.
I guess so. We did see Abby in real life, and she's hot stuff.
Yeah, looking better in real life than on the island.
She's hot stuff. She was actually very nice, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
She will definitely be in our category of looks better on real life than on the island.
She looks better in the club.
Yes. Very, very good. Very good. As we go through all of the materials put together by Scott St. Pierre this week, let's see, what else is going on? Oh, Troy Zan tweeted, He said, see there, Survivor fans? Old guys like us just know how to balance our balls. At Mike Scoopin, Team Scoopin, kicking ass.
I love a good balls competition.
Well, we
are trying to lose my accent in saying balls, and I'm having a hard time.
Yes, do you need lessons?
I do need lessons. I need hooked on phonics.
Yeah. So I spoke with Jeff the other day, and he asked for some criticism of him. And so I said, one of the things, Jeff, I feel like we've lost the inappropriate comments this season. And he said, what do you mean by that? And I explained it. He said, no, we just haven't had any balls challenges. This week we have two balls challenges, not a ton of inappropriate comments from Jeff. Here's the best of the lot. We have, this is in the immunity challenge. Jeff says, Pete loses two of his balls.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Well, that's tough. That's tough
stuff.
That's a
tough loss.
That's tough stuff if it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and then a lot of people really enjoyed our podcast last week with Jeff Varner. And the biggest thing to come out of that, quite literally, is Jeff Varner talking extensively, at length, about Mike Scoopin.
Really at length.
Yes. Yes.
Scoopin's packing heat.
Yes. Kajillion123 says, Jeff on Mike and Colby's down there business. Mike's the Hershey bar and Colby's a fun size Snickers.
Well, I do like Snickers.
And as Colby once said, I ain't no Hershey bar. He did say that.
He did say that.
He's,
well, he knew the business.
He said that. I ain't no Hershey bar.
Yeah.
Mary McMahon says, I just love Jeff Varner. So funny. Thanks for not editing. Ha ha. That explains seven kids. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I can't believe this is like a subject.
You people are sick.
You people are sick. And Los Polos Hermanos says, Scoopin' is Lisa's goat, LOL. But it isn't the first time. Remember, Sophie said in the final Tribal Council of South Pacific that she made Coach her little blonde girl.
Yes, she did.
She did say that. All right. So thank you guys so much for all your comments. We get lots of great comments on the website. And also on the Rob is a Podcast Facebook fan page. And, of course, with the hashtag RHAP on Twitter. But, Nicole, let's get into some voicemails.
Actually, before you forget, because you always do, who is the next HOI?
It is Jessica Frey, Nicole.
She's a busy little beaver.
Yes, she is.
So congrats, Jessica Frey. Okay.
Congratulations. Okay. All right. Anything else you want to get to?
I guess that's it.
That was it. All right. Let's talk about some voicemails, okay? We just started doing the voicemails on the show a couple of weeks ago. I like to do it.
It is a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. And I always like to get them whenever we can. So here we go. Let's get into some voicemail. robhasapodcast.com/voicemail. You could leave us a message. Tell us whatever you want to talk about. And if it's good, we'll play. We're not playing all of them.
No.
Let me get that out right now.
You got to make the cut.
You got to make the cut. Yeah. We're not playing all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But here we go. Let's go ahead and try. Let's start with, how about number, let's go with Sheehan and Sheeta.
Oh, geez, I'm on. Hi, all. Sheehan and Sheeta from Australia. Real name undisclosed.
You're on.
Rob, there's eight people left, isn't there? It's day 25, right?
Undisclosed.
Do you prefer a final two with nine?
Yes.
Or a final three with eight people in the jury? What do you think will happen, and what would you prefer? Thank you.
All right, Nicole.
Oh, I love an accent.
Yes. A lot of accents on the voicemail.
Yes, thank
this
you,
week.
Anonymous.
Okay, yes. Okay, so Nicole, very interesting here. We now have three people left on the jury, Nicole, and there are eight people left in the game. Okay?
Right. So there are three people on the jury, eight people left in the game.
Three people in the jury.
Right.
Eight people left in the game.
Yes.
Okay? So yesterday was November 14th.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Next week will be a new episode.
Right.
And there will be seven people left in the game after the 21st.
Mm-hmm.
The following week is the 28th.
Mm-hmm.
After the 28th, there will be six people left in the game. This assumes no double eliminations.
Okay.
Okay? As we go along here. So then the following week, December 5th, okay, that will take us down to what? Five people left in the game?
Basic math.
And then the following week, December 12th, that would take us down to four people left in the game.
Uh-huh. So it'll be the final four going into the finale.
Yes.
On that Sunday.
2-hour show, you got to think, can't have one elimination in the final four, Nicole. Could we possibly be heading towards a final two this season?
Deuces.
The final two with a 9-person jury.
From the math, that's what it seems like.
I think we are going there. I am excited to see that. Mm-hmm. I think just to keep Survivor on its toes, the Survivor players on their toes, hey, it's not always a final three.
Right.
Could be a final two. Might be a final two with a 9-person jury. Might be a final two with a 7-person jury. Mm-hmm. Keeping you on your toes.
Right.
Keeping it interesting.
Liking it.
I like it. Do you prefer a final two or final three?
It depends if you're playing.
Yes. Okay. What if I wasn't playing?
I like the final two.
You like a final two. Why?
The final three is interesting, but I like the final two because it brings it back to, you know, the beginning.
You like, because it's old school.
Yes, I like the old school.
Yeah, I like that it is, you got to pick, there's no third option. It's, did I play a good game or did this other person play a better game? It's not like, well, you pissed me off and you did nothing. Okay, I guess I'll vote for you.
Yeah.
No A, B, or C. It's a binary choice.
I love binary choices.
I know you like that. Okay. All right. So let's go into, how about this? This is from James Pickering.
Hello, Rob. It's James from England. Despite Survivor not being shown on TV over here, I still watch it religiously on the internet, and I love your podcasts. Just wanted to know, after your podcast with Boss and Rob and Jeff Probst already this season, who would be the next Survivor-related person who you would like to cross off the podcast bucket list? Thanks very much.
Oh, that's a very good question. Thank you, James, for your wonderful accent.
Yes. Thank you, James. Thank you.
Yes.
All right, Nicole. Podcast bucket list. Who's on it? Interesting question.
Yes.
Interesting question. And for me, I kind of feel like there isn't anybody left on the bucket list.
We blew our load?
Well, no. But for me, I'm not out there trying to, you know, just cross off names off the list like Jacob on the island.
Right.
You know, there are people that I'd like to still interview, but the idea of the bucket list is like, oh, I got to do this before I die.
Right.
And if I died or if I got canceled, there's nobody left out there that'd be like, oh my God, I can't believe
I can't believe
I stopped doing the podcast. Uh-huh. And I didn't talk to this person. Now, that being said, for me, my bucket list is not so much about people, but it's about shows that I want to do and things that I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Survivor Jeopardy is on my podcast bucket list.
And you said I could get a new dress.
And you can get a new dress. I want to do a reunion show for the 10-year anniversary of Survivor the Amazon.
Oh, is that going to be a possibility?
Well, it's on my bucket list.
Okay.
I want to make Miss Survivor into a bigger spectacle.
A household name?
A household name. there's all these things that I want to do, not necessarily people that I want to
So you're not going to interview people for the sake of just interviewing people?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'd like to talk to all the winners. I mean, that would be nice.
Yes.
But I'm not, like, going out of my way.
It's the quality of the shows that count.
Yeah, I'm going to find the most interesting people.
Uh-huh.
People that are relevant to what's going on.
Yes.
And we'll go from there. And I also want to do shows that I've always wanted to do and work on big ideas and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's my bucket list.
I like it.
Okay?
I like your bucket.
thank you very much. Although, speaking of the bucket list, I guess if there was one person on the bucket list right now.
Hi, Robin.
Ron
Nicole.
Chan.
It's Ron Chan here. Just have a question and an announcement. It's for my question.
Ooh.
Who has a better chance of making their second appearance on the podcast? Rob Mariano or the lovely Roseanne Sesternino? And as for my announcement, if you can get Deb Eaton on the podcast, I will donate $50 to RHAP.
Whoa. All right.
Ron Chan, big spender.
All right, first off, yes, much better chance my mom makes a second.
She's already been on it twice.
She has been on two times, yes. That's right. So better chance my mom comes
make
on again.
But
I don't think it's impossible that we get Boston Rob back. I think he would be willing to do that.
I think he had a good time. I think he really enjoyed it.
I thought he did. All right, but here we go. It's Bounty Gate, Nicole. Ron Chan is putting out the bounty on Deb Eaton. He's like a member of the New Orleans Saints.
Mm-hmm.
He's putting a $50 bounty on the head of Deb Eaton.
Sounds appropriate.
Now, are we doing that? Are we letting people put bounties on guests?
We don't say no to money.
We don't say no to. I guess not. Yeah, that would be a quite a generous contribution, Ron Chan. And we will be. I did message Jeff Varner right before I came on to do this. So yes, we are working on getting Deb Eaton to you.
And this conversation and voicemail is legally binding.
It's legally binding. That's right. And if you ever want to make a contribution to Rob Has a Podcast, I haven't mentioned this in a couple months, you can go ahead and make a PayPal donation, especially for people who are not in the United States. I do get emails from people. Does it work if I buy something on Amazon and I don't live in the United States? No, it does not.
Aww.
Our deal only applies to the United States. But if you ever want to make a PayPal contribution to Rob Has a Podcast, and we appreciate that very much.
We very much appreciate it.
You can go to robhasawebsite.com/support. We appreciate it. If you donate more than $5 or more, we'll send you a signed picture.
Mm-hmm.
Donate $50 or more, we'll send you a Rob Has a Podcast coffee mug, and you'll be the envy of all of your coffee drinking friends.
Yes, and everybody drinks coffee.
Everybody who's anybody drinks coffee. All right, next, let's go to Jeffrey Bamberger. He's got a comment.
Hey, Rob, it's Jeff Bamberger calling from my business trip in South Carolina. Didn't have a question for you guys, but I just wanted to let you know that I got up early this morning to make sure that I could listen to the Probst cast before going over to my client, and I just want to thank you for finally putting that together. It was a fantastic podcast, and quite possibly the greatest podcast of all time. Thanks again. You did great. Talk to you later. Bye.
Greatest podcast of all time. How do you like that, Nicole? Thank you very much, Jeff.
Yes.
And as I said at the end of the Jeff Probst podcast, thank all of you guys.
You guys made it happen.
For putting it out there and working so hard to get Jeff Probst on.
Mm-hmm.
Really appreciate that. Okay. But that being said, let's check in with Sandy. She has a complaint, though, about Jeff Probst's podcast.
Oh, no.
Hi, Rob. This is Sandy from Atlanta. I wish you had asked Jeff Probst if they're ever going to give more than $1 million. Seems like after 10 years, they should be doing a better job. Thanks.
Okay.
Go up with inflation.
Yeah, she wants to give away more than $1 million. And speaking of the $1 million prize, let me play Ori Kohav's voicemail.
Okay.
Hello, Rob and Nicole. This is Ori Kohav. I love the Jeff Varner podcast. It was so funny, and a lot of good points were raised there. But there is one thing I'm a little disappointed that you didn't talk about.
No.
In his exit words, Jeff Kent said, "It's not even $1 million. It's 600 grand by the time Obama takes it." That must be one of the most outrageous moments in Survivor history. I mean, bitching about money is one thing, but throwing a blame on the president? What the hell?
Whoa. What the hell, Nicole?
What the hell, Jeff?
What the hell?
So we know why? You have $60 million.
Now, why, if Obama is taking all of this money out of Jeff Kent's $1 million, shouldn't they make the Survivor prize bigger?
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think they need to go with the times. $1 million, so 10 years ago.
That's 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Now, what about Ori's point about that? Was that the one of the most outrageous things that ever happened on Survivor?
It was kind of crazy that they left that in there.
No, absolutely not. It is not in the top 100 most outrageous.
I don't think
things.
It's one of the most outrageous, but I do think it's a crazy statement to leave in there.
I don't think it was that. It was that crazy. Like he
I,
wasn't.
I think so.
He wasn't like calling Obama like, and I need to see his birth certificate while we're at it. You know?
Only really crazy people do that.
Yeah, it's not Donald Trump. I mean, I thought it was good natured. I get it that he's not a Democrat. Jeff Kent.
But not everybody has $60 million. $600,000 does a lot for a lot of people. Sorry, Jeff Kent, even though I have a crush on you.
I didn't think it was that bad of a thing, and I thought it was said in a joking way. I didn't think it was getting on a soapbox and going after the president.
Well, it was a jab.
It was a jab. It was a jab, but I don't think it was anything that was politically charged.
Yes.
Yeah.
I forgive you, Jeff Kent, because I love you.
Yes. We got it. Got it. All right. And one last question from Austin Trupp.
Hi, Nicole and Rob. This is Austin from Maryland. Just want to ask Nicole, if you had to choose between shopping never again for the rest of your life or divorcing Rob and never being able to see him again, which would you choose? So shopping or Rob? I'm very interested to hear the answer. You guys are awesome. Thanks.
So if I...
Would you rather never go shopping again or never see me again?
So I have to make a choice over shopping and you?
Yes.
That is very tough. But I do have quite a large collection of shoes that'll get me through many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
As well as lots of cute outfits. So yes. I would have to pick my love bug.
Oh, thank you, Nicole. Thank you.
But apparently you're someone else's love bug.
Really? You're going there? How many months ago was that?
Every time I say the words, it reminds me.
All right. Anyway, thanks so much, everybody, for getting through another Survivor podcast. If you liked what you heard today, you want to give us some good feedback on iTunes, go to robiswebsite.com/iTunes. Give us 5 stars if you think we deserve it. Leave us a comment, too, on iTunes. We always appreciate that. And so, Nicole, that's going to wrap up another week of Survivor podcast.
It was an amazing week.
It was an amazing week. So next week, lots of big stuff coming up. We've got our Rob is a Web show on Tuesday. We'll see. Let me check in with Steven and make sure where he's free to do a Survivor Know-It-Alls Thanksgiving
on
Eve.
On Tuesday or Wednesday?
On Wednesday.
Okay.
On Thanksgiving Eve, Wednesday. We'll see. Make sure Steven is available to talk live after the episode. And then coming later in the week, we're going to probably skip Thursday. On Friday, I will bring you your Survivor podcast. Get ready for the long holiday weekend, everybody.
Yes, I'm off Tuesday and Wednesday this week.
Okay.
Next week.
Okay, fair enough. You'll let us know.
Sounds good.
Sounds good. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for getting through it, and we will talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Bye.